May it please the court, my name is Steve Cupp. I'm here representing appellant Larry White. Judge, I think, and please forgive me, I'm battling the end days of a cold here. So,
if you want to bring up your water, you can.
I'm fine right now, thank you. But, Judge, I heard early today the argument.
Don't cough at us, please.
I will not. I heard our, the.
That would be reversed. That would be held against you.
I will try not to do so. I heard argument this morning on a case where someone is killed in an intoxication case, and obviously that is an incredibly sad occasion. I think other than something like that, Your Honor, I'm here representing Larry White in one of the saddest and most difficult civil cases that I've been involved with regarding a man who is really in the battle of his life for cancer. With cancer and trying to get an insurance company to pay some benefits to him so he can get treatment and try to stop this disease. What I'm going to ask judge and judges is that the court reverse the district court's December 10th opinion, which ruled on the pleadings that Time Insurance Company issued an insurance policy to Mr. White that limited his health care benefits on outpatient services and covering chemotherapy treatments to $2,500 per year.
What's your theory of the case?
My theory of the case is that the Time Insurance Company didn't issue the right insurance policy to Mr. White upon his request in 2007. He bought it in 2005. I went back up and when he bought it in 2005, he was owner of a company for many years. And he retired in May 2005. He contacted Mr. Small, Albert Small, who is a Times insurance agent, an independent broker living along the Gulf Coast area.
Right.
Okay. He purchased a policy that went into effect on June 1st, 2005. Your Honor. The Whites live on the water, along the Gulf Coast. When Hurricane Katrina hit, they lost everything. At the time, I don't think he had even made a claim under any policy he had bought. He had bought it. He didn't even know if it had come in. He didn't even remember seeing it. Okay, but he lost everything in 2005 when Katrina hit. In late 2006, Mr. White was diagnosed with cancer. He spent about a year trying to get his life back together. Was traveling one day, had some problems, and was diagnosed with cancer. That is then when he asked Time to send him an insurance policy, send him the insurance policy that he thought he bought, one that he thought covered catastrophic illnesses. Time did not send him the insurance policy until sometime in 2007. At that point, Mr. White was going through his treatments, and they started receiving the explanation of benefit forms showing that Mr. White was being denied treatment based on a $2,500 outpatient cap. The insurance company was taking the position that going to get chemotherapy at a doctor at $10,000 a pop or so was subject to a $2,500 outpatient cap under the policy. That is when, frankly, he contacted me. He didn't know what to do at that point. He had an insurance policy that they had sent to him, okay, but he was questioning the benefits under that policy. And I did have some conversation and discussion with Times Counsel, and that is when, after some letters went back and forth, we received a declaratory judgment action filed against Mr. White in 2008. Okay, the judge issued his decision on December 10th, 2008.
Well, the initial problem in this case centers around what is the policy, and. You admitted that what they attached as Exhibit A to their pleadings was the policy. Now, we can argue about whether that's binding or not, but for the moment, let's assume that there may be an issue about that. Is it your contention that what they have as Exhibit A is a replica of what your client purchased? And if not, what policy did your client purchase?
No, I am not saying that it's what my client purchased. I'm saying that's not what he purchased. We're saying he purchased, not only are we saying he purchased a different policy, Judge Jones, but so is Time's own insurance agent, in this case, Mr. Small, who submitted an affidavit saying that that wasn't the insurance policy that Mr. White purchased in 2005.
What is it then that you say you admitted to?
I said that that's the one they sent to us in 2007 after Ms. White, Patsy White, requested the policy from Time.
Well, okay, I mean, how was the admission framed? How was the request for admission framed?
Well, it wasn't a request for admission, Judge. It was in the
pleading.
It was in the pleading.
It was in the pleading. Right.
Yeah, and it said that, I've looked at it many times, but it said that what was attached was the insurance policy that was issued to White, and that was effective on June 1st, 2005. Okay. Which was the effective date of the policy. Now, keep in mind, that's all Mr. White had at that time. We didn't have anything else.
Well,
and that's what they had sent to him. And that's why when we looked at it, we said, well, yeah, that's what they sent to us. And I think they want to conflate the terms issue with what we accepted and bargained for and purchased back in 2005.
But what you admitted to didn't say anything about what was sent to you, right? It just said that was what was issued.
It said that was what was issued. That's what it said. It said that was issued to Mr. White, and that was effective on June 1st, 2005. And that's what Judge Osterdien did, and that's where we think the error was made, is he took
that. Did you ever move to withdraw? I mean, after, I assume that in moving for judgment on the pleadings, they basically alerted you that they thought that this was a conclusive admission and you couldn't get around it. Did you move to amend?
No, Judge, I didn't, and I didn't think I had to at the point. We had filed a third-party complaint against Mr. Small. Mr. Small came in and defended the case and raised the issue that Time had sent the wrong policy, that wasn't the policy, in fact, that Mr. White had bargained for. Through him with Time?
You know, the problem would be, I suppose, that if you had a policy with them, at some point you were obliged to say what the terms of that policy are. And so Mr. Small doesn't have any records? You didn't do any discovery about how they had decided to send you this one?
Absolutely, Judge. That's what we were engaged in. When the judge issued his opinion, we had a 30B6 deposition scheduled for the following week in Milwaukee to take Time's deposition regarding this. We sent discovery to Mr. Small. Mr. Small represented to us. He sent us a bunch of different policies in different language. He represented that his computer-based module that he used to write policies didn't have outpatient caps and limitations, and we were engaged in that discovery process when the judge issued the ruling, and then the discovery stopped. That's one thing we're asking for, Judge. We're asking for the case to be remanded to, at the very least, allow Mr. White to complete the discovery process to test the veracity of whether Time, in fact, did issue the proper policy to Mr. White back in 2005.
Didn't the court refer to one of their Times agents' affidavits in the course of his opinion?
Yes, there was I guess as an in-house person, I don't know exactly who it was, I think it was Mr. Dix.
Well, if he referred to anything outside the pleadings, that means it's not a decision on the pleadings, it's on summary judgment.
That's one issue we have with the judge. The judge did refer. I mean, they're saying that it was attached to the pleading as part of their pleadings, as part of the insurance policy that was submitted. But that's what the judge did. He completely excluded and ignored all the extrinsic evidence, including Mr. Small's affidavit, which specifically said, I just don't understand how the judge could get around that, which specifically said that was not the policy that Mr. White bargained for in 2005. That was not the correct policy. There was other extrinsic evidence that the judge didn't consider, including the application, which raises several suspicions regarding whether Mr. White bargained for a policy with a $2,500 outpatient maximum. And the judge got around that by just saying, he says, listen, I'm going to call that you committed a judicial admission. I don't care what Mr. Small says. I don't care what Mr. White says. This is what I'm going to hold. Therefore, I'm going to exclude all the extrinsic evidence and hold that this was the policy that Mr. White purchased back in 2005. That, Your Honor, we believe is manifest error and a complete miscarriage of justice in this case, particularly since we were engaged in the very process of trying to determine that through discovery. Sitting on my desk, I had a plane ticket ready to go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin the very next week. We were going to try to get it done before Christmas and take their 30B6 deposition and explore these. I had been in contact with Mr. Holmes, which is Mr. Small's attorney, regarding their submission.
I assume Time is a regulated insurance company, and don't most insurance companies have most of their policies on file with state regulators? Aren't they form-type policies?
Yes. And
all right, so do you have in mind, as your theory of the case, another policy issued by Time that did not have this limit?
Yes, ma'am.
You do?
Yes, and that's what we were going through. We had asked Time and Mr. Small through discovery for the various insurance policies that they were selling at the time in 2005 when Mr. White was engaged in the process of reviewing them and trying to purchase one. Keep in mind, Mr. White at the time was 59 years old. He had a family history of some cancer. I know that, you get an insurance policy, you may not read it. He didn't recall receiving any insurance policy, but what he can recall is that he wouldn't have purchased a policy with a $2,500 outpatient maximum per year. I've been told in talking with the Whites that the cancer treatments run to $10,000 to $12,000 a pop.
This is a nice post hoc argument, but so I gather you're basically acknowledging that if this policy that they attach to their declaratory judgment action is the governing policy, then you lose.
No, I don't, because okay. Our alternative argument, Judge, is that it's even if, and I think whether they issued the correct policy to Mr. White in 2005 or sent the correct policy to him in 2007, which Time's own insurance agent denies, okay? That's a question of fact that should go to a jury to determine. Even if a jury would have determined, yes, looking at everything, we're more inclined to believe that this is the policy that he bargained for. Our other argument is the policy by itself is ambiguous in its exclusionary terms. And that policy, even if it does apply, is ambiguous. And that's the second grounds where Judge Oserdien, in our opinion and estimation, erred in holding that in reviewing the four corners of the document, that there is only one reasonable interpretation of the policy. And we do not believe that was the case, Your Honor. And Judge, I want to go back. I want to address, and again, I know I reserved some time on for a couple minutes at the end, so on rebuttal. But Judge Oserdien, in holding that we committed a judicial admission, primarily relied on the Martinez case out the Fifth Circuit. And it is very clear under that case that any admission has to be intentional and explicit, unequivocal, deliberate, and unambiguous. I mean, that's the language that this court used in that case. And that case involved a plaintiff's counsel who interrupted a deposition because he didn't want the defense counsel to get into any physical injury issues in a Jones Act case. And he came out and said, the plaintiff's counsel, we're not alleging any physical injuries in this case, so we're going to stop you from questioning. Well, because that was a necessary element of this Jones Act case, the judge ruled that was an admission by the counsel that precluded them from coming in and submitting an affidavit later that said the lady was injured. Again, that's the type of intentional, explicit, unequivocal, deliberate, and unambiguous admission.
Are there any other Fifth Circuit cases that you're aware of that deal with admissions on the face of the pleadings?
Your Honor, I've looked. No, I mean, there's general language that says, and which we can see, there's general language that says an admission can be in a pleading. I think the other side quotes, various treatises, but no, I have not been able to find one. I've looked diligently.
Had there been any pretrial conference or other, statement of undisputed facts or anything like that where you might have dug yourself in on this policy?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. That was when we addressed the judgment on the pleadings after it was filed. That was the one thing that we put in there. It was like, we don't deny that that's the one that Time sent to them. That's what they sent to him upon the request when Patsy White requested it in 2007. But that's far from being an admission. That was the right policy that was sent to him. And keep in mind, we didn't receive Al Small's affidavit in that regard, where he expressly said that wasn't the policy that Mr. White bargained for until approximately 6 months after we had even answered the deck action. So there was a timing issue there, and then there was counterclaims, there was third-party claims. Mr. Small filed a claim against Mr. White, and he also filed a claim against Time, saying that he wasn't properly appraised of any changes in policy. We thought the issues had been joined, that there was no reason to go back and perform any amendment at that point. Of course, hindsight's easy at this point. Gosh, I wish I would have, but I did not. Judge, on the secondary issue is even if this is the policy, that it is ambiguous. And our primary argument, Judge, there is that this policy covers 24, the covered benefits section has 24 express provisions that it covers. On 12 of those provisions, it expressly limits coverage to, quote, outpatient calendar year maximum. Seven other provisions limit the recovery in some other way. The ones that Mr. White filed under, the hospital services provision and the healthcare practitioner services, don't have any specific exclusion. And we would argue, Judge, that where they didn't put a specific exclusion in the definition of the benefit being offered to the insured, then that exclusion is shouldn't apply to it. And that's a perfectly reasonable way to read the document. In Mississippi, it's very strong that any ambiguity in an insurance contract is going to be construed against the interest of the insurance company. And to me, it's a very easy conclusion that it is ambiguous, and that even if this is the policy that applies, that it should be construed against Time, and that Mr. White is entitled to additional benefits under the policy. My red light's on. I think I did reserve some time, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Holmes, I'm not quite sure what you need to say, but you're welcome.
Well, I'm not sure what to say either, because he has not appealed the dismissal of my client, Albert Small.
Good for you.
I just came here to try to make sure that was clear.
Well, that's a good point, because I've recently encountered the exact same issue where somebody didn't appear to appeal somebody, but so it's probably better safe than sorry.
It's hard to keep crying in the desert and with no one to answer you or no one to argue with you. I do want to say a couple of things about Al Small and his affidavit, though, that might apply to the Time, the fight between Time and the Whites. And, Your Honor, after I prepared that affidavit, Mr. Small told me that he had sent White an application for a different policy. After that, I took the deposition. I personally took the deposition of Mr. and Mrs. White. Now, I didn't file that because it didn't involve me, and apparently it was not filed by either of the other parties, but Time did file the exhibits that were mentioned in the deposition, and they're item number 9 in the Times appellant's record excerpts. Your Honor, the very first page of that is an application that Mr. White filed for the policy that that had the $2,500 maximum. Now, either what Mr. Small thought after that was, well, I must have sent them more than one application. By the way, Mr. Small never met with Mr. White. He simply sent him some forms in the mail. He can't control what Mr. White does. Apparently, he sent him both forms. And if you'll notice, if you look at that exhibit, it starts with page 3.
Mr. Hull, I mean, this is very interesting, but I really don't think this has anything to do with the posture of the case before us. I mean, this is, it's interesting and it's discovery, but we're not here on discovery. We're here on some legal issues.
Okay.
But I would say that by action and conduct of what appellant has done, you're out of the case.
Thank you.
So tell Judge Osedon we said so.
May it please the court.
Mr. Wilson.
Walter Wilson for Time Insurance Company. Honorable panel members, this is a very simple case. If, as counsel opposite states, he purchased or he was sent the wrong policy, then there is no coverage. So I don't see where that gets him.
I have never seen a judgment on the pleadings in these circumstances before. And it looks to me as if the district court committed clear error by referring to an affidavit of your client in the course of granting judgment on the pleadings when it was obvious that this case was in a nascent state.
Judge, it's a judgment on the pleadings motion, which is a Rule 12C motion.
I'm
as
familiar
opposed
with
to a 12B6.
I'm very familiar with that, and I know the difference between 12B6 and 56, and I've never seen a judgment on the pleadings except in some constitutional cases where it's a question of failure to state a claim. And, you know, there may be nothing to this man's claim. I'm not taking a position on that, but it is shocking to me that the judge wipes him out on the pleadings. Where he could have filed a simple amendment and retracted, oh, I didn't mean to say that on the pleadings. I meant so-and-so, and amendments shall be freely granted unless it's not in the interest of justice.
Your Honor, first of all, none of that happened. Plaintiff's counsel never moved, or claimant's counsel never moved.
He filed two affidavits.
But he never moved to withdraw any prior statements that he made in pleadings.
I understand that. You're asking for a quick and easy out, and the judge gave it to you. And he may be right, but I'm not sure it should have been done so prematurely. And he had two affidavits. You filed affidavits. Your brief refers to your affidavits. It's summary judgment. That being the case, he could not exclude consideration of the plaintiff's affidavit.
No, Your Honor. All the two affidavits that Time Insurance Company filed, all they did was authenticate the policy.
Doesn't
and Mr.
matter.
Holmes
that doesn't
point,
matter. It's not part of the pleadings.
It is part of the pleadings, Your Honor, because it was made an exhibit. And under Rule 12C, which references Rule 10C, it becomes part of the pleading.
I understand that, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily admissible. The whole issue here on judgment on the pleadings turns on the strength of his admission and whether that is absolutely and utterly conclusive.
Your Honor, even if everything you're saying is accurate,
thank you.
Where does it get counsel opposite? Nowhere. If what you're saying is accurate and he's allowed to withdraw, you know, an admission, then they don't have a policy.
This is why I asked him, well, now wait a minute, because this is why I asked him for his theory of the case. You filed a declaratory judgment premised on the theory that this is the policy that you sent him and that he entered into in June of 2005. He now takes the position, and I agree he did not preserve it in the best possible fashion, but he has two affidavits that say, I did not want a policy that was going to confine me to 2,500 when I might have cancer and get chemo. Now, whether that's post hoc or whether that is his consideration, I take no position on. But that is his theory, that he bought another policy. He did pay premiums, did he not?
He did, Your Honor. And even though that is his theory, the records in the case, the records that they have, flatly and demonstrably contradict that. The application in this case.
But that's all summary judgment, and that's all without discovery having taken place. And that's the only problem I have.
Your Honor, all these were exhibits. The application that they prepared, they being claimants, was faxed from their business on the first page. It's got outpatient limit, $2,500.
I do not deny the force of what you're saying, but that's all outside the pleadings. You got judgment on the pleadings. We cannot convert that to summary judgment at this stage. Under certain circumstances, we could. We cannot do that here.
Your Honor, if it would make you feel more comfortable, I can submit cases. Rule 12C, an affidavit affixed to a pleading is not outside of the pleadings, especially in a post-Iqbal and Twombly world. I mean, I understand your, you know, your argument, Judge, but they are not outside of the pleadings.
Martinez does not take you where you want to go. I did not see another case that wiped somebody out on the face of the pleadings. We're in a notice pleading regime, notwithstanding Twombly and Iqbal. You made no, you didn't go on his pleadings. You went on one admission, the admission in his pleadings, which under Rule 15 at that stage of the case, he could have easily moved to withdraw and clarify.
Well, let me see if I can give you a little comfort, Judge. Other than
I'm not comfortable, but well, I don't care what. Give me a case.
Johnson versus Houston's Restaurant, 167 Federal Appendix 393, Fifth Circuit, 2006.
And unpublished opinions are worth what they cost. Federal Appendix what? 296?
393. It's 167 Federal Appendix 393. Wyatt versus Hunt Plywood, 297 F Third, 405. Franco versus Corpus Christi, 254 F Third, 1081. Those are all 2001, 2004, 2006 cases that essentially state that an admission made in a pleading is binding unless withdrawn formally. There is no dispute about the fact that counsel opposite, at a minimum by his own admission, knew as of August the 22nd that there may be the wrong policy. Nothing was ever done. Nothing has been done.
He filed two affidavits.
He never moved to withdraw the admission.
Well,
that's not the same thing,
Your
Honor.
Well, that's fine as a technality. That is fine as a technality. But you know very well that if now that you're relying on evidence outside the pleadings, he's relying on evidence outside the pleadings. Now you got to your point. You said, oh, well, if you file an affidavit that verifies something in your complaint post hoc, that's okay. That's still the pleadings.
Okay. And even if it is just a technicality, if he's allowed to withdraw it and it's not the correct policy, this policy form, Form 244, as Your Honor asked questions of counsel opposite, this is the Time Insurance Company Mississippi authorized form. This is it. So if this policy is not governing,
there's nothing in the record that tells us that, sir.
This is the policy that matches the application.
Well, ain't in the record.
What was it? Was it possible in Mississippi to purchase a policy that was the same, except it would not have contained the $2,500 outpatient?
I'm not aware of any policy that would have a larger than $2,500 outpatient limit. This is a case where there's inpatient coverage. That's not limited to $2,500, but the definition in the policy of outpatient and chemotherapy, even though it does cost a lot of money, outpatient is deemed a hospital stay of less than 24 hours. It clearly is outpatient coverage.
And
now, to answer your question, is there a policy? I'm not aware of one.
And you know what? If he had had the policy in front of him when he had to embark on chemo, I'll bet you he could have gotten a doctor to say, well, you need to stay in the hospital every time you have chemo.
Your Honor, he...
Now, maybe time wouldn't have covered that.
Exactly, because doctors know how to code things. And it's not only has to be inpatient, it has to be medically necessary. And a doctor who follows, their oath, unless there's a serious issue, is not going to code something as medically necessary just to get around, an insurance
No,
company.
They never do that.
Well, I mean, none of them wanted
never,
to do it
never.
Here, so.
Well, that's totally outside. I'm not saying, I'm really not prejudging the merits of the case, because you have a pretty strong argument based on the language of the policy that you attached. But what I am very concerned about is that the judge just sort of leaped to try to make an efficient resolution of this when it appears to me that there was it's just totally inconsistent with the idea of fact pleading.
Well, and Your Honor, and I don't know what the lower court judge was thinking, but clearly I believe, and I'm not just advocating and posturing, this is a simple case. If it's the correct policy, Time Insurance Company wins. If it's the incorrect or an incorrect policy, Time Insurance Company wins. There's either coverage or not. I'm not aware of any other policy. There's nothing in the record. I represent Time nationally. This is the Mississippi policy form. The outpatient benefits are limited to $2,500. That's on the application that the claimant submitted, his own application that he faxed in. It's from day one known and knowing that it's a $2,500 max.
Inpatient, so it's a catastrophic policy. It's called a catastrophic policy.
Inpatient, you don't have a max like that.
I understand that, but it's but it isn't. It, I mean, this is another issue, but it is somewhat misleading to call something catastrophic and then not cover chemo.
No, Your Honor.
Beyond $2,500.
Catastrophic treatment normally connotes a hospital stay. That's just a fact. If you have
That's
a catastrophic
not what a
injury,
like myself would think.
I mean, if you have a catastrophic injury, you're normally in a hospital. If it's less than a 24-hour hospital stay, just common nomenclature, you really wouldn't call that catastrophic.
I'm sorry, but most people would consider cancer to be pretty catastrophic.
Judge,
but
I don't...
I mean, that was between him and the agent, I suppose.
And he has cancer coverage for his cancer treatment. If it's an inpatient hospital stay, he has coverage. There's
but
no dispute about that.
But you're the one who was just
fact.
Telling me that a doctor would violate his oath if he made a patient stay in the hospital for
chemotherapy.
Chemo. All right.
You have inpatient cancer treatment after you go through the first stages of that treatment, which there were claims, which they were paid. Then you have your chemo treatments. You go into the hospital, you're there for a few hours, and then you leave. And they do cost a lot of money. The chemotherapy treatments, there's a $2,500 max. There's no dispute about that. And if it's the wrong policy, if this is not the policy you know he wanted, then he has zero coverage.
So as you're explaining it, it sounds like it's not at all like applying for an automobile insurance policy where you can adjust your premium based on whether you want various benefits such as liability or uninsured motorist or comprehensive or anything like that. It's just you get this policy or not. In other words, there's no election of having a particular limitation or not for outpatient or any other choices, right? It's just this is the policy and that's it.
I do believe, Judge, that there are some add-ons, but I don't know of an add-on. If you could say, for instance, have a $20,000 outpatient limit. I'm not aware of anything over a $2,500 limit. There are other additives or amplified coverage aspects, but that's really not an issue here. You can get, for instance, a larger lifetime limit. Instead of $2 million, you can get $6 million or $8 million.
Well,
you can have well baby coverage, but on the outpatient aspect.
Here's where I was going with that. I realize that your position is that there should be no discovery here, but if there were discovery, I was thinking maybe there would be a way of figuring out how the particular premium was calculated so that it could be identified that premium meant that certain benefits were allowed and certain ones weren't. That would certainly be the case with an automobile insurance policy. You could go back and explain so much per month and here's how that's calculated, so much for liability, so much for comprehensive and so forth. But you seem to be telling me that that would not be the case.
I think that's right, Your Honor. And under the dual doctrines, under the filed policy doctrine and under the filed rate doctrine, Mississippi DOI heavily regulates insurance companies and the rates that they charge and the rates that they set. These are all agency-driven issues. So I don't know, even if the panel were to remand and send it back, I mean, if these are issues, I think first and foremost they should run through Mississippi DOI because they have primary jurisdiction over anything smacking of questions about the policy or the setting of premiums.
You know, our court just got reversed on our interpretation of flood claims under Mississippi policies, right?
Yes.
So,
Corbin.
Ambiguity.
You're talking
is
about
not
the Corbin opinion?
Huh?
The
Pardon
Corbin
me?
Opinion?
I don't remember.
The
it's
ACC
in the last
clause?
Yeah.
Yes. Came down about 2.5-3 weeks
yes.
ago? Yes.
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 So that's a little fly in the ointment here as to what's ambiguous. But as I said originally, it's not the outcome of the case that I have a predisposition about at all. It's just the nature of the way in which the court pursued it.
Judge, if I could just say in closing, because I see that my amber light is on, even if the panel were to remand, it would be futile. I mean, I think one of the reasons, again, I'm not in Judge Oserbin's head, but if you look at the policy documents, if you look at the file documents, if you look at the testimony in the case, the result, regardless of whether there's a judgment after 10 months or 10 years, is that under this policy, the only policy, There is no coverage for outpatient exceeding $2,500 a year. And if this is not, you know, the correct policy, which is counsel opposite's argument, again, I don't know where that gets them, because then he's got zero coverage. And he has catastrophic cancer coverage for his, and if he breaks his back, anything else, there is health coverage. Outpatient, though, is limited. And that's what we have here.
Well, I understand that, but the pleadings don't say this is the only policy we issued in Mississippi.
But why? I mean, I don't know why that burden or that onus would be on Time Insurance Company. This is the policy that was issued here. It's beyond dispute. On the application, and I know I keep harping on it, but it's very important. On the application, it's got the policy form 044, and it's got the outpatient max.
But the application isn't your Exhibit A.
It's their exhibit. It comes from the claimant. It's their own application.
But again, that's not in their pleadings, is it?
I think it's an exhibit to their counterclaim.
Pardon me?
I think it's an exhibit to their counterclaim. But even if it's not, it's an exhibit to the deck action that we filed. I think it's an exhibit in multiple pleadings.
Don't want to screw up here, but I thought I had a copy. I thought that what we had was a copy of the policy, not duplicate policy, it's called, not the application.
Exhibit 4.
You only had one exhibit to your complaint, to your deck action.
Your Honor, I could verify, but this is the application. And it starts, it's got an Exhibit 4 sticker, and it's a 7-page fax, page 1 through 7, and it came from Mr. White's office.
I understand that, sir. I'm just talking.
I mean, are you asking where was that made a part of the record?
Yes.
Okay. That I cannot answer off the top of my head. I'd have to verify. And
okay.
Since my red light
That's
is on,
fine.
I can send a supplemental. It is in the record.
I'm sorry. It's a stupid question, so I just won't. We can look at the record ourselves. It's not in your original pleading.
Are you asking me or are you telling me? Because I think it is. But, I mean, if you're asking me, I don't know.
Okay.
But if that's...
All right, we'll look it up.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Cupp?
So what about the application, Mr. Cupp? Is it in the record?
No, sir. Well, the application was not a part of their original pleading. The application information, that was sent to Mr. White via our discovery requests, our written discovery request to him.
All right, so we find that application in the record somewhere.
Yeah, it would be attached. I did attach it to our opposition to the judgment on the pleadings.
Okay, and that application will show a $2,500 limit on outpatient?
It shows on the very first page, Judge, and there's a lot of, I enumerated in the brief, the very suspicious nature of the application process, the application itself. But it will show there is a $2,500 statement or limitation on there. But our position, Judge, is that there are additional applications that we sent in that did not contain that. I mean, they want to argue that there's no other policy out there. Well, we don't know that, Judge. That's what we're trying to find out. Al Small, their own agent, says there's another policy out there that he sold Mr. White. We were in the process of trying to discover that. And then we just get thrown out of the court when I think that Judge Osadin did that. He it was an efficient way to get rid of the case.
They cited he cited the Johnson, the Wyatt, and some other cases, those that were saying that a party is bound by his pleadings. Did you look at those cases?
Yeah, Judge, and again, those cases are the standard general law that says, you know, there can be an admission in a pleading. Pleadings include answers, requests for admissions, and those type of things. But certainly they don't address a judicial admission like Martinez does, where it has to be intentional, explicit, clear, unambiguous, and unequivocal. That is not what Mr. White did in this case. And Judge, what this case compels is a remand back so we can engage in this discovery process. I mean, they want to say we don't have a policy. If this is not the policy, we don't have a policy. We don't agree with that. On what basis are they saying that? Simply based on counsel's representation.
You sent checks to somewhere, I take it.
We did send checks, and they increased every year.
And they paid benefits on some basis, so there's obviously something out there.
That's correct. Judge, the other issue that you raised, I do believe that the Corbin case does put a fly in the ointment on the ambiguity issue. It's very clear that Mississippi case law, you know, they got rid of the eerie guess, I guess, on the Corbin case. But it's very clear that any ambiguity in the insurance contracts could be construed against the insurance company. We believe that even if this is
Judge
policy,
Center is probably very happy.
I imagine he's not. I don't know.
No, he is.
I guess he would be.
Might not.
but we would argue, Judge, that even if this is a policy, it's ambiguous. Send us back. Let us conduct discovery. Let this case proceed. They have a shot at it later on. The judge ultimately holds that there's no issues of fact later on. Well, at least we'll have,
you're
we have gone
through. You're never going to concede anything in a pleading again, are you?
I am never going to do that. That was a huge lesson learned. And I did not believe I did that in this case. But I understand their position. Hindsight's easy in this one. And, I just do not believe this reaches the Martinez clear, unequivocal, unambiguous judicial admission standard that the Fifth Circuit has held to be the standard for an admission. I'm done, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Court will be in